Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Regulating AI, the podcast that brings together global voices to explore the intricate landscape of AI regulation for a fair and responsible future. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have an exceptional guest with us, Jonathan Horowitz. Jonathan is a legal advisor at the International Committee of the Red Cross's regional delegation in Washington, D.C. Jonathan brings a profound understanding of the challenges and implications of AI, especially in military contexts. So today we'll delve into the ICRC's perspective on AI, its humanitarian concerns, and the vital role of international law in regulating AI technologies. Jonathan, thank you for being with us today.
Sanjay, thanks so much for the invitation. On behalf of the ICRC, really appreciate the opportunity and very much looking forward to the conversation with you today. Thank you.
Same here. Jonathan, we have a global audience. Our audience is made up of members of Congress in D.C., their staff, think tanks. Then it spans entrepreneurs running AI companies, AI, you know, experts, aficionados, but it goes across to the EU and other countries. So can you start by explaining to our global audience who might not know what the International Committee of the Red Cross, and we'll call it ICRC in our discussion, and what is it and what is it the mission for it?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to provide a little background about the International Committee of the Red Cross, or the ICRC. So the ICRC was essentially born on the battlefield about 161 years ago. And since then, it's been our mission and mandate to protect and assist victims of armed conflict and other situations of violence, and to look out for their lives and dignity, and to provide humanitarian assistance where we can. We're in about 100 countries worldwide with about 18,000 staff operating in those countries at our headquarters.
Wow. So it's really a global organization, Jonathan. Are you focused mainly, would you say, in conflict or war zones? Is that what that ICRC does?
That's certainly what we're most known for, and that's where we put the vast majority of our effort and resources, dealing with situations of armed conflict and assisting victims who are living through the horrors of war.
Okay. So our podcast is Regulating AI, and people might be wondering, what is ICRC concerned about artificial intelligence? So if you could just give our audience why ICRC is looking at AI, and how does ICRC define AI, especially in context of armed conflict?
Yeah, great question. So starting with the definition question first, from the ICRC's perspective, artificial intelligence is the use of computer systems to carry out tasks that require cognition, planning, reasoning, or learning, tasks that are commonly associated with human intelligence. And there are also AI systems of our quote-unquote trained. That's what the ICRC regards as artificial intelligence as a working definition. Now, it's also true that artificial intelligence is a general purpose technology, right? So, of course, we're going to see it across a vast spectrum of uses by militaries, by governments, by really almost everyone these days. But what the ICRC has done, because we are focused on situations of armed conflict and assisting victims of armed conflict, is that we've consulted with external experts, we've consulted with our in-house expertise, and what we've landed on are a number of priority areas where we're seeing militaries either wanting to use or using artificial intelligence in their military operations. And I'll just tell you quickly what those three priorities are. The first is artificial intelligence being used in autonomous weapon systems. The second is artificial intelligence being used in cyber operations and information operations in situations of armed conflict. And the third category of focus is artificial intelligence in military decision support systems. Now, with each one of those, we have various concerns. And I think we'll have the time to talk through what those different concerns and legal challenges are. But I also want your audience to know that the ICRC also sees the opportunities for artificial intelligence in things like more responsible and efficient humanitarian action to be used by humanitarian actors. But there are also risks associated with AI being used for those purposes as well. And it seems that there are opportunities for AI to be used to enhance compliance with international humanitarian law or the law of armed conflict, basically the law that regulates war.
Okay, so obviously you identified three areas and we'll delve into those three areas, autonomous weapons, cyber, and decision support systems. But before that, can you, you talked about the importance of a human-centered approach. That's what I saw on your website to AI in armed conflict. For our audience, can you elaborate on when you talk about a human-centered approach to AI, what are you talking about?
So for the ICRC, a human-centered approach is absolutely critical to understanding how artificial intelligence should be responsibly, lawfully, and ethically used by militaries engaged in warfare. And so from an ethical perspective, the ICRC regards it as being essential to preserve meaningful human control and meaningful human judgment in particularly significant activities that can result in loss of life, death, destruction of civilian objects or infrastructure. And with the preserving of that human control, of that human judgment, also comes preservation of a measure of humanity in warfare. And so it is absolutely critical for the ICRC to promote the human-centered approach that says, essentially, AI can be used as a tool in military operations that decision makers can rely on, but AI should not be used to replace the decision makers. So that's from an ethical perspective. Then from a legal perspective, the rules of international humanitarian law, the laws of war, that's a set of rules that are directed at soldiers, at commanders, at humans, at people. And they have to figure out what they can attack and what they're prohibited from attacking. And they have to make these calculations on what's a proportionate attack or what might be a disproportionate attack. And there are prohibitions against indiscriminate attacks. Anyway, all of these rules require context-specific judgment and assessments by commanders and soldiers. And it's for that reason that, again, there needs to be a human-centered approach in the uses of artificial intelligence in military applications so that humans are not divorced from the life and death decisions that are made on the battlefield.
So, Jonathan, could not the AI be programmed for some of these rules that you're talking about, proportionate response or disproportionate response? Is that possible?
So I think there are a number of things to consider in that question. One is, even if you were able to, you still have that ethical dilemma that remains, removing human agency from the battlefield, from life and death decision-making processes. But if we turn then to the legal issues, there are still significant risks in artificial intelligence and what that brings to victims of armed conflict. The men, women, children, the elderly, other categories, everyone really being vulnerable in situations of armed conflict. So the stakes are high. They're enormous. And we know both from peacetime applications of artificial intelligence, but also increasingly as artificial intelligence is finding its way onto the battlefield, that there are risks around the following things. One is unpredictability of effects using artificial intelligence tools. The other is that you can have system limitations that have to do with biased information, incomplete information, erroneous information that gets baked into an AI system that then has impacts deleterious to the outputs. You also have the phenomenon of automation bias, right? The phenomenon where the user blindly accepts the output of the AI system with really not that much human decision making going on in that process. So you have things like that, not to mention there are limitations on what technology allows at the moment with regard to artificial intelligence. So when you think about the principle of distinction and you think about an urban battlefield where you have civilians walking around and you have military soldiers moving around in the same space and you have civilian vehicles and civilian houses and schools and office buildings intermingled with military tanks and military convoys, for a algorithm to be able to unpack the complexity of that situation to determine what may be attacked and what must not be attacked, to determine whether or not an attack might be disproportionate because of the incidental civilian harm that may be caused. Those are all things that put considerable strain on an AI tool in an extremely complex environment. And the risks are so high if that AI tool is fragile. I mean, we're talking about life or death errors. Those are some of the concerns and considerations that the ICRC has when we think about the practical application of artificial intelligence, whether it's in cyber, information operations, autonomous weapon systems, or AI decision support systems for militaries to use.
You bring up some very, very, I think, interesting points. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. So, Jonathan, you talked about how civilians could be intermingled with army combatants, etc. I mean, you could be talking about a current situation that we are dealing with right now. There are several war zones going on in the world. So now, if you go back in time, there have been a few, or maybe more than a few, drone strikes that had human in the loop that actually killed, by mistake, civilians, in some places, children too. So the point that I'm trying to ask is that humans can make mistakes too. That's the one point. The other perspective could be that people might say, hey, the AI might be better in terms of decision making. Yeah, your point about bias and other things is correct. But the big issue right now when we talk about enterprise and commercial world is, hey, we want to have a human in the loop. And this is what you, when you talk about human-centered applications, so that's what you're saying. And then also you're saying making the distinction between civilian and other combatants. So what you're saying is that, you know, the odds of AI making mistakes are much more than probably a human would be. True?
So in response to that question, of which the ICRC has to respond to on a regular basis, so these are things that we regularly hear. So one response is human control and judgment is a legal requirement under international humanitarian law. That can't be simply wished away. The ICRC has also consulted broadly with ethicists, and they've also told us that this issue of removing human agency from the battlefield raises considerable ethical problems when it comes to life and death decisions. You know, significant risks that we're talking about here. So that is heavily baked into the shaping of the ICRC's use. It is true that humans can make mistakes. It is also true that there are systems in place so that humans can be held accountable for those mistakes. You know, that is a fundamental part of warfighting. That warfighters, there's a requirement for responsibility and accountability. It's baked into our global military manuals. It's baked into our domestic legal system. It's baked into our international criminal justice system, right? So we need to keep human accountability, human responsibility tethered to the life and death decisions and consequences and effects of warfighting. So that's probably my main response to that question.
Okay. Jonathan, let's talk about autonomous weapons, because that's the first category, and they are a significant focus for ICRC. For our audience, can you tell them what are these according to the ICRC, and what are the associated risks with autonomous weapons?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to go into this a little bit with a little bit more detail. So the definition for the ICRC of autonomous weapon systems is a weapon system that, after it's been initiated by a human, that it is able to select a target and use force against a target without human intervention, based on sensors and on a generalized target profile, right? So this definition is distinct from, for example, a drone that's remotely piloted. Because in a remotely piloted drone, you have a pilot that's able to press a button that sends a missile from the drone to the target. Mm-hmm. We're talking about something distinct from that, something that's unique from that. So that's the definition that the ICRC uses. And it's a definition that is comparable to other states or to states that are also discussing this issues. Now, in terms of the associated risks, there are humanitarian risks. Why are there humanitarian risks? Because it's a weapon system. And weapon systems can result in death, injury, destruction in situations of armed conflict. Death, injury of children, of women, of men, of civilians, of combatants. There's a humanitarian element and concern that autonomous weapon systems bring to the battlefield. Second, there are legal considerations, legal challenges, legal risks. It is incumbent under international humanitarian law that commanders that use weapons are able to assess that the weapons they're using are going to comply with international humanitarian law. And yet autonomous weapon systems, depending on the system, depending on how it's being used, has the potential to be used in such a way that a commander does not know when or where a target will be struck. So that raises important legal issues. And then we go back to the ethical issues. You know, what does it mean for an autonomous weapon system that can effectuate violence on human beings to do that without a human decision maker closely tied to the effects of that weapon system? And so I think we'll get to it later. Hopefully we'll get to it later. But those are the risks and concerns that we have. And then the ICRC also has several prescriptions and recommendations on how we think states should respond to those risks. But that gives you an overview, I would say, of the ICRC's position on that matter.
So we understand the definition and the risks. What about the ICRC's view on the current international regulations? Are there current international regulations concerning autonomous weapons, and are there changes being advocated around those, Jonathan?
So the initial answer to the question is yes, there are regulations under international law that place prohibitions, limitations, restrictions on the use of autonomous weapon systems, and that's this body of law that I've been talking about: international humanitarian law, the law of armed conflict, the law of war. So there's no need to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. And there is considerable state consensus that international humanitarian law does regulate autonomous weapon systems. Why? Because they're a weapon system. And that's what IHL does. That's one of its main functions. It places limits on means and methods of warfare, right? Means and methods of warfare are not unlimited. So you take that principle, you take the rules, you apply it to autonomous weapon systems. But there are also new challenges to how autonomous weapon systems present themselves on the battlefield. I've explained some of them already. One of the big ones is lack of predictability. Mm-hmm. Another one has to do with these ethical considerations around the taking of human life. And so there have been discussions around the need for states to clarify how international humanitarian law regulates autonomous weapon systems. But there's also been increasingly deep and broader discussions around if supplemental additional binding rules are also necessary. And here's where the ICRC sort of fits within those discussions. So the ICRC takes the position, based on humanitarian, legal, and ethical considerations, that indeed there is a need for new legally binding rules for states to craft and adopt and comply with. It's a three-prong recommendation, based on both prohibitions and restrictions. So first, the ICRC is recommending that states put in place rules that prohibit autonomous weapons that are insufficiently predictable. So that's the first. The second, both for legal issues, humanitarian, and also importantly, ethical issues, and this would be a real development or advancement of international law, the ICRC is recommending to states to also prohibit all autonomous weapon systems that are designed or used to target humans. And then the third category of our recommendations to states falls under the recommendation that all other autonomous weapon systems, so the ones that aren't too unpredictable and the ones that aren't designed or used to target humans, that all other autonomous weapon systems have a set of limitations and restrictions and a degree of human-machine interaction that regulates their use. So here we're talking about limitations such as not using autonomous weapon systems in certain contexts where they would be inappropriate, such as complex urban environments. This also includes limitations or regulations, for example, on the geographic scope at which a autonomous weapon system might, for example, fly in airspace, temporal limitations, how long will it be out there, doing the mission that it's been tasked with. So that gives you an example of the type of limitations and restrictions that we think should also be put on other autonomous weapon systems. So we're not calling for an absolute complete ban on all autonomous weapon systems, but we're trying to take a more nuanced, sophisticated approach. And one, by the way, I should really impress upon your audience, those limitations and restrictions that we're recommending states put into binding law, those reflect current day practices. Those reflect the way states already use weapon systems that have degrees of autonomy baked into them. So we think they are practical. We think they are sensible. We think they reflect legal, humanitarian, and ethical imperatives for the exigent situation that armed conflict brings to people.
So good. So you identified three areas that need to be emphasized, as you said. You know, in terms of this, Jonathan, you raised a few things, and a couple of questions we got from our audience is this international humanitarian law. Are countries like North Korea, Iran, and others also signatory to some of these things for folks who might not be as well-versed as you are? So that's one of the questions that happens. And the other question also, and we'll probably get more into it, is non-state actors. And I'm sure that's something that is of concern to you. And the third one, and I have a zillion others, but is, you know, the world looks at nuclear weapons in a certain way. We look at chemical weapons, you know, it's really considered like the worst of the worst. Do you believe, or ICRC, that autonomous weapons could fall in that category, whether it's, and I'm saying with the implications of autonomous weapons or the use of AI. So those are just some broad things, and you know, you can address them as you think appropriate. But some of these are some of the questions coming in to us from the audience. So I thought I'd bring that over. And there's many more questions we have. But anyway, so just the first one on the signatories of this law, are some of these countries who probably, maybe at least from a United States perspective, are maybe a little bit different in terms of how we look at the world, like Iran or North Korea and others. Are they also signatory to this rules?
So one of the extraordinary and even exceptional things about the Geneva Conventions is that every country in the world is a high contracting party.
Great.
It's phenomenal. It's impressive. It's inspiring. At the same time, there's always been issues around compliance. And we always, as the ICRC, strive to ensure better compliance. And that's part of the dialogue that we have with states around the world, many states from all corners of the globe. There are also additional rules that international humanitarian law provides, additional to the Geneva Conventions, and they are widely ratified around the world. There are some states that aren't high contracting parties, but many are. And you see this written, you see the rules of international humanitarian law written into military manuals around the world, right? So we're not talking about a body of law that is exceptionally unique to only a handful of countries or only a certain corner of the earth. So that's one thing that I wanted to point out.
That's very good to know, though, for our audience. Yes. Thanks, Jonathan. Continue.
The other is that it is also in many ways a unique feature of international humanitarian law that it does bind non-state armed groups who are parties to an armed conflict. Right. So do non-state armed groups have to comply with international humanitarian law? Yes, they do. Non-state armed groups that are parties to an armed conflict have legal obligations, and they can be held accountable for breaching some of those legal obligations. So what that also means is when non-state armed groups are using certain technologies as a means or methods of warfare, the same limits that international law places on states when they use those technologies are placed on non-state armed groups when they use those technologies. So that's another point that I want to make in response to that question. Mm-hmm. And really, really happy and grateful that you allowed me the time to answer that. The issue of the magnitude of the concern around autonomous weapon systems that you asked on that third question. So in the three-prong recommendation, right, inherent in that is that some autonomous weapon systems are compatible with international humanitarian law if they're appropriately regulated, mm-hmm. if there's appropriate human-machine interface and interaction. At the same time, it is an extremely scary, concerning prospect if human judgment, human control, human agency is removed from the battlefield while human death and destruction remains on the battlefield. That is a deep, deep concern from a humanitarian perspective, from a legal perspective, from an ethical perspective. And so I just want to sort of emphasize that point, that while on the one hand, the ICRC is not calling for a complete ban on autonomous weapon systems, on the other hand, we are deeply concerned if they are used in a very specific way that raises considerable humanitarian, legal, and ethical concerns for people living in situations of armed conflict, and for that matter, both civilians and the warfighters. It raises legal, ethical, and humanitarian concerns.
No, great. So I think for our audience, it's good to know that almost all countries are signatories to the Geneva Convention. Even non-state actors have legal obligations. And I think the point you made is that, you know, certain autonomous weapons are regulated, but there are concerns when there's no human in the loop. Jonathan, we get a lot of guests here. And this is a little more of a technology question. And the big thing in AI right now is, well, there are two big things. One is agents, you know, intelligent agents that function by itself. Right now, people talk about, hey, can you make my travel bookings, do this, do that, etc. The agents will do all of that. And the other thing is AGI, which is, you know, artificial general intelligence, where the AI becomes as smart as us, in some cases smarter than us. You know, agents can be done, can take care of maybe your arranging for your laundry or your travel, but you could also think of them maybe doing things that might be a little bit in terms of other areas too, and the AGI could be used. So when companies say our goal is to have AGI by this period of time, etc., I mean, these are very, very large companies. Does that concern you watching the march of technology? Because it seems inevitable. The timing could be a few years, a decade, or something like that. Because when you talk about autonomous weapons, I mean, this is the ultimate autonomous, whatever you want to call it, weapon, or at least autonomous things. So is that something of, or at least you're looking at some the agents and AGI, at least from keeping an eye out on that?
So the first thing I'll say is that as technology, whatever form it takes, marches forward, it must not push international humanitarian law out of the way. It must march forward with and within the confines of international humanitarian law. And if states find it necessary to clarify that point, to elaborate on that point, to pursue new legally binding rules or treaties to ensure that point, then that is necessary, right? The march of technology cannot supersede the imperatives that international humanitarian law bring to the battlefield in terms of seeking to protect the victims of warfare. So that's the first point that I want to make. The second point that I want to make is that I am not a technologist. And so we have experts within the ICRC that would that are looking into these issues, that are sort of tracking the technological debates and advancements. And the ICRC also regularly and routinely is consulting with outside experts. That gives me a little bit of an opportunity to make a plug for the fact that we recently put out two reports specifically on the issue of artificial intelligence in decision support systems, one by a wonderful external consultant called Decisions, 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 appropriately titled, and the other done with the Geneva Academy called Artificial Intelligence and Related Technologies in Military Decision Making on the Use of Force in Armed Conflict. So while I don't have a specific answer for you on that specific question, it just gives your audience a sense of how the ICRC remains engaged in the very fast moving, like you said, march of technology, and in particular for the ICRC, how it intersects with military uses of those technologies and the humanitarian, legal, and ethical considerations that go along with those uses.
Jonathan, for our audience, where can our audience find those two reports? Can you please tell them?
So both of them can be found on the ICRC's website, or if you do a word search for ICRC and artificial intelligence, they'll crop up and they should be easy to obtain.
Fantastic. Jonathan, coming back to autonomous weapons, how do you think AI might affect the principle of distinction, do you think, in the international humanitarian law?
So on this question, I think we can think about it in two different ways. Mm-hmm. So one is, and we talked about this in sort of some of my, you know, opening comments, is that the principle of distinction requires the user of a technology, of a weapon system, for example, to distinguish between civilians and combatants, civilian objects and military objectives. Mm-hmm. And so on the one hand, you could foresee artificial intelligence being used to give commanders better situational awareness of the battlefield, to give them better options for how to effectuate a target in a way that is in compliance with international humanitarian law, both the principle of distinction, but also the prohibition against indiscriminate attacks and complying with the rule and principle of proportionality. So there are ways that artificial intelligence could potentially enhance IHL's, a commander's compliance with IHL, but we need to see more demand signals for that technology to get developed. So that's one thing. On the other hand, artificial intelligence can bring with it those issues that we talked about already, automation bias. So when artificial intelligence is in the target selection or acquisition process and commanders are blindly following the output of that algorithm, that can have significant detrimental effects on compliance with the principle of distinction. Everyone talks about AI and the benefit that it brings with regard to speed. Things are speeding up. Decision making can speed up. But also there's a benefit to slowing things down. It allows for greater collection of information, for more time to analyze information, for more times to think about options for reasons of complying with international humanitarian law, for reasons that can go to the heart of protecting civilians and civilian infrastructure and other people that are protected under the law of armed conflict in battlefield situations. So it can run in both directions. And I think that's why when we think about AI as a general purpose technology, the ICRC is not there to vilify AI, but to look at how it's being used and what it's being used for. And that's where we take the discussion from there. And in some cases, we may say that's an opportunity. And in other cases, we may say, oh my goodness, that is a considerable risk. And on the principle of distinction, I could say that you could look at it in both ways. So it's not an either or. It's a, what is the specific AI tool being used for and how is it being used?
No, great. Just moving to decision support systems, can you explain to our audience how AI is AI-based decision support systems are being utilized in military settings, Jonathan?
Yeah, so there are a number of ways, and a lot of this is explained in the experts report that I had just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is AI decision support systems, AI DSS, sometimes referred to, being involved in the identification, in the selection, and the prioritization of targets. So it's involved in the targeting process. We're seeing AI DSS being involved in the collection and analysis of large quantities of data to generate information for battlefield commanders on conflict environments. So that's another way that we're seeing artificial intelligence being used in decision support systems. We're seeing it being used in collateral damage estimates, trying to understand how to ensure that a commander is complying with the principle of proportionality. A lot of militaries do collateral damage estimates. And we're seeing it used in different aspects of weaponry decisions. So that gives you a sense of the types of military applications. That's not all of them. Again, it's general purpose. You're seeing AI being used in procurement, in medical, military context. But for the ICRC, in terms of use in use of force decision support systems that can have grave consequences and effects on people in armed conflict, those are a handful of the ways that we're seeing AI DSS being used.
Okay. Understand from the DSS standpoint, let's talk about a topic that's obviously really hard either from a civilian as well as a military perspective. What concerns does ICRC have regarding AI's role in cyber operations? Jonathan, can you tell our audience that?
Yeah, and so to do that, I should probably start with what the ICRC's concerns are with cyber operations even before we add AI into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've observed is that there are essentially three categories of concerns that we've been focused on. The first is around cyber operations that can disrupt essential services of civilian populations, because civilians are so attached to digital infrastructure, right? Our health systems, our water systems, our electricity, transport that brings us food, our agriculture systems, all of those things that provide us with essential services are often reliant on digital infrastructure, and that digital infrastructure is vulnerable to military cyber operations, right? It's vulnerable in peacetime. And now you have a wartime environment, and you can just easily imagine how much more vulnerable and how much more of a negative impact cyber operations can have if people don't have access to medicine, to clean and potable water, to electricity that is able to provide them heat in the dead of winter. So we have concerns around that. The other issue that we're concerned about with cyber operations is the escalatory impact that can have in conflict, because both sides may not fully understand how the other side is behaving in or through cyberspace, right? So we're still working with states to more clearly articulate how international law places rules and restrictions and limitations on their behavior in cyberspace. It's a huge project. It's not just the ICRC that's involved in that. The UN's doing it. States are thinking deeply about this in other multilateral forum and bilaterally and unilaterally. But we're deeply concerned about the escalatory effects that cyber operations can have in conflict scenarios where there's a misunderstanding of what's happening on people's networks and systems. And the third has to do with proliferation of cyber weapons and how they can sort of end up in the wild, being repurposed, re-engineered, used for things that they were not intended to be used for, right? So if you have a closed off system that a cyber tool was trying to intrude and disrupt, and then it's used in a system that is not as closed off, it can seep into that digital infrastructure that provides essential services for civilians. Now, to your question, AI, what does AI add to those concerns? Speed, scale, and scope. The speed at which cyber operations can take place, the scale, the magnitude of them, and the scope without geographic limitations that respect international borders. Those are all things that I would say AI enhances the ICRC's concerns when it comes to cyber operations. And again, the ICRC, so devoted to trying to project the importance of a human-centered approach, cyber operations that are happening at a speed through AI technology, a speed at which humans cannot control or comprehend on a battlefield, where we're talking about life, dignity of people, is deeply concerning. And again, is the reason why international humanitarian law is so important, because that body of law puts reins on that type of that type of risk, that type of damage, that type of destruction, that type of danger that is so often found in armed conflict.
Jonathan, does the cyber rules like you have talked about are also within the bounds of some of the laws like the international humanitarian law or the Geneva Convention? Do they cover cyber also?
So they do. They absolutely do. There is increasing broad state consensus that international humanitarian law regulates the military use of cyber operations in situations of armed conflict. So what does that mean a little more specifically? It means a cyber operation that is directed at a hospital network would fall foul of the principle of distinction, just like a fighter jet that bombs a military, a health facility would fall foul of the principle of distinction. You also apply the principle of proportionality. The obligation to take all feasible precautions to avoid or minimize civilian harm. These are tried and true principles of international humanitarian law, and they apply to cyber operations and situations of armed conflict as well. Now, there are debates about legal interpretations. I don't want to sort of paint the picture that it's sort of 100% unquestionable, very easy, just open up a book about international humanitarian law and just apply it straight to cyber operations. There are several debates on how rules of IHL are interpreted, but there is a broadening and increasing and wide consensus now among states that international humanitarian law does regulate the use of cyber capabilities as means and methods of warfare in situations of armed conflict.
Just another point is the use of AI for misinformation during armed conflicts. Is that something the ICRC is also looking at? Because, well, there have been the use of misinformation, especially AI-driven, even in non-armed conflicts that has caused all kinds of issues. But now in armed conflicts, it could have a bigger role. Does ICRC have thoughts on that?
We do, and we're deeply concerned about it. And it's a growing body of work that we increasingly try to understand the relationship between harmful information in a armed conflict environment and the negative impact it can have on civilians, civilian populations, others protected under international humanitarian law. So on the one hand, or one issue of concern, is the escalatory impact that harmful information can have in a battlefield environment. Communal violence, stoking communal violence, discriminatory narratives that can incite violence. And this isn't only state versus state or state versus a particular group. This can also stoke intercommunal violence as well in situations of armed conflict. So that's one issue that we're particularly concerned about. Another is the impact that harmful information can have on humanitarian actors, the ICRC included, right? We can see narratives out there that target the humanitarian community and start to dilute the trust that the civilian population has with regard to relying on organization X, Y, or Z to provide them with food, water, shelter, clothing, whatever it might be in terms of the humanitarian assistance being offered. So the ICRC is very attentive to that. And then a third issue that we're looking at and quite concerned about is when information operations or social media platforms can be vectors for actual violations of international humanitarian law. And so very often it's said that propaganda, psyops, info operations have always been part of warfare and have always been acceptable. Well, there are several exceptions that need to be made to that generalized statement, right? And so some of them can be around things like a commander is prohibited from issuing flagrantly unlawful orders to his or her subordinates. That means they can't do it over a social media platform as well. You can't recruit child soldiers over a social media platform. That's a violation of IHL. You can't threaten acts of violence against civilian populations for purposes of terrorizing them. And you can't do that over a social media platform, right? So this relationship around the types of harm that information can bring to a conflict environment, the escalatory impact that it can have, the impact that it can have on the humanitarian sector, and the fact that social media platforms can actually be vectors for violations of IHL, I'll give you an example of how the ICRC is thinking about the issue of misinformation, of disinformation, of harmful narratives in conflict environments.
No, that's, I think...
And I can add to that, AI, speed, scope, scale. You know, the production, the dissemination, the speed at which all of that is happening. You know, it's bad enough when it's happening, you know, through individuals or sort of information campaigns doing it. When it's happening on the grand scale of what AI permits, in the sense of what AI technologically allows for, it becomes a multiplying factor with regard to concerns and risks.
Well, that's true. And that's a huge, huge concern. Jonathan, it seems when you look at the conflicts that are going on or the ones that have happened or future conflicts, at least the messaging or the evidence is that it's going to be autonomous warfare to a large extent. Now, as you made some distinctions, you know, you see most countries are using drone technology in current conflicts, in the past conflicts that have happened, and it's almost become like, and even non-state actors are using that. And now countries are using swarms and drones that are coordinating with each other rather than, as you said, a human in the loop. And the combination of AI with robotics is also coming. So when you look at that, how is ICRC engaging with governments and tech companies to, you know, to address some of these AI-related challenges in armed conflict? This is, you know, we've had a great discussion, and I have like 20 other questions, but maybe we need to have you back again. But for our audience, they want to know, yes, ICRC has all these positions and, you know, on some very, very critical topics, but how do you engage with governments or tech companies to address some of these issues?
So we're trying to engage with as many actors as we can on as many fronts as we can, mm-hmm. right? So what does that mean? It means we have a rep in the Bay Area talking to folks in Silicon Valley about harmful information. It means that I and my colleagues at the ICRC are talking to technology companies that are providing goods and services to parties to an armed conflict to talk to them about what the legal and humanitarian implications of that are. We're at the UN. There's a open-ended working group, and there's a group of government experts, and they're covering issues around autonomous weapon systems that we've been talking about, cyber issues that we've been talking about, military operations in and through outer space. So the ICRC has a presence there. And what's important there is that we're also engaging not only with specific sectors of the world or hemispheres, but also the global south. These are global issues. Mm-hmm. And so it requires attention at the UN, for example. So the ICRC wants to be there. We're also having our usual bilateral conversations with governments. Mm-hmm. Sort of the bread and butter of what we do. So on many fronts, we're going to different conferences with the presence of strong hacker communities to talk to them about what it means to responsibly engage in cyber activities with regards to the rules of international humanitarian law, letting them know there are limits to what hackers can do in situations of armed conflict under international humanitarian law. So do we talk to everyone? No. Do we try to talk to as many people as we can? Yes. And we're doing it as many places as we can because we're a global organization and trying not to put all our eggs in sort of one corner of the world or with one group of states. We need to diversify who we speak to because these are global international issues.
So you are really, the outreach is going on with tech companies, with the hacker community, with governments at UN in a bilateral forum. So if any of our listeners attend these conferences, you never know, you might bump into Jonathan or his colleagues. Please say hello to them. Jonathan, towards the end, we have a lightning round questions. We've had a pretty intense discussion. So this we'll try to do this very short so that it gives you an opportunity. I won't call it light, but at least a quick answer from you. So you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. AI, a friend or a foe?
I don't think it's an either or. I think it depends on what it's being used for and how it's being used.
Okay. I agree with you. Autonomous weapons, ban or regulate?
Both. Some need to be prohibited and other types of autonomous weapon systems need to be regulated.
Okay. Human oversight, necessary or optional?
That one's necessary. Human control and human judgment is an absolute necessary requirement for both legal and ethical reasons in military operations.
Okay. AI in warfare, is it inevitable or is it avoidable?
So it's inevitable in the sense we're already seeing it on the battlefield, and that's why compliance with international humanitarian law, the law of armed conflict, is so absolutely necessary.
Great. Well, Jonathan, really, thank you so much. Tell our audience, just from your standpoint, what message does the ICRC want to convey to the international community regarding AI regulation and armed conflicts? Just very briefly, for our audience.
So one is, I think in the military context, there's a lot of discussion around the benefits that AI brings to the warfighter. I think there needs to be a lot of discussion also about the risks that AI brings to civilians and others protected under international humanitarian law in situations of armed conflict. We've gone through what those risks are. No need for me to repeat them. But there need to be more demand signals that require people to think about risks and to respond to those risks. But additionally, with the risks also come potential opportunities. Opportunities for humanitarians to use artificial intelligence if it can be done in a responsible way that reduces some of the same risks around bias, automation bias, etc. But also AI that could be used to enhance international humanitarian law compliance. People talk about it, but we need more demand signals that put money and investment and development into that if people are going to say that AI can actually bring more humanity to the battlefield. So that's what I would end with. That's what I'd give to your audience. And I really appreciate the opportunity to end on that question.
More humanity on the battlefield. That's a great tagline. Thank you, Jonathan, for providing such valuable insights into the ICRC's perspective on AI and its implications for armed conflicts. As we have explored today, the integration of AI in military operations presents, as Jonathan said, both opportunities and challenges necessitating a careful and informed approach to regulation. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on this journey. Stay tuned for more discussions on regulating AI, where we bring many diverse voices to the forefront of AI regulation debate. Until next time, this is Sanjay Puri signing off. Thank you, Jonathan. This was fabulous.